You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. It's your pet. Health matters. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Welcome to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. I'm Dr. Diane Levitan, and I'm honored to be your guest host while Dr. Bernadine Cruz races with the dogs in sunny Alaska. Thank you for joining us. Well, today we'll find out why our pets are fascinated with other dogs' poop, your boss's crotch, and your dirty, socks, and much more, because Dr. Elise Christensen, a board-certified veterinary specialist in veterinary behavior, is here to give us answers to those age-old questions. Dr. Christensen became interested in veterinary behavior as a high school student when she worked at a general veterinary practice and began training pets for pet therapy at local substance abuse facilities. Since then, she's graduated veterinary school and completed advanced training in animal behavior and is a board-certified specialist in the field. We're really lucky to have such an expert, and we're going to need one for these questions. Stay tuned to find out why poopsicles are a dog's favorite treat. We'll be right back with Dr. Christensen after these messages.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages. Coast to coast and around the world, it's Oh Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. Oh Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. With us now is renowned veterinary behaviorist, Dr. Elise Christensen. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Christensen.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Levitan.
First of all, what is a veterinary behaviorist, and how's that different from a trainer or an animal behaviorist?
Well, it's pretty different in that what's required is a little bit more intense. And when I say a little, I mean a lot. Actually, to be a trainer or even to be a quote-unquote animal behaviorist, you don't actually have to have any approved education. So anybody can go out there and hang their shingles, animal behaviorist or a dog trainer. Now, not all all people that say that they are animal behaviorists or dog trainers do that, but it's certainly possible. So it makes it much more difficult for you to know sort of the level of education of the person that you're working with and how many classes they've taken, their continuing education, all of that. There's some certifications out there, but they vary in their intensity and their philosophy, whereas with veterinary behavior, you can be assured that what this is a professional organization that actually requires postgraduate training in behavior. For instance, to become a board-certified veterinary behaviorist, you not only have to go to veterinary school, but you have to do an internship or its equivalent, as well as a residency, and these are 2 to 3 years long, mostly three at this point. Publish peer-reviewed literature articles, take examinations, and publish.
You're making me tired.
Yeah,
so reliving the training.
It's very intense, and I think what's great about that for our clients is that they're in a really tough spot most of the time by the time they're seeking help from somebody like me. And so when they come in to see a veterinary behaviorist, they can really be assured that they're seeing an expert.
Yeah, I mean, veterinary school alone is 4 years. Then you have to do an additional at least 3 or 4 years of training to become
exactly.
A veterinary. So how does somebody find a veterinary behaviorist as opposed to a trainer or an animal behaviorist?
Well, there's a few ways you can do it. The first thing you should always do if you have a behavior problem with your animal is talk to your veterinarian. Your veterinarian is definitely the best person to touch base with because they know who's in your area and who you might be best off seeing. For instance, some animals really are better off seeing a dog trainer. If your dog is jumping on you and he's not aggressive, then, hey, you should see a dog trainer because you don't need a veterinary behaviors for that type of patient. But if you're looking for a veterinary behaviors, like let's say your dog or your cat is anxious or aggressive or urinating in the house and you haven't been able to control it, then I think the best thing you can do besides talk to your veterinarian is you can actually go out on the web and look at the organization websites for these. For instance, the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists website is www.dacvb.org, and the American Veterinary Society of Animal Behavior is www.avsabonline.org. And those two have good sites that not only have public information on behavior problems, but also will help you locate somebody that who is either a specialist or has a special interest in behavior.
So thank you for that great explanation. But what I really want to know is let's get to the gross stuff. Why do our pets do these really disgusting things? When we're all dressed up, people come over to the house, they always find the person that hates a dog and always have to go over and sniff their crotch. Dr. Christensen, why do they do that?
There are a lot of reasons that dogs might do these types of behaviors. I think one of the major things you have to think about when you're evaluating why a dog does any one particular behavior is think about it from his perspective. Dogs are very olfactory in nature. They explore their environment and understand their environment through smell. So it's very natural for dogs to greet people with sniffing behaviors, and if you watch how dogs greet each other, you'll find they actually do sniff the inguinal area, even the back end of the other dog. You know, it's very common for you to see this little dance that dogs do where they're both smelling each other's rear ends. That's one reason. But the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that if your guest is a person that doesn't really like dogs, they're not going to be doing the stuff that a normal guest, quote-unquote, a guest that likes dogs would be doing, right? They're not leaning down and petting the dog. And so when the dog sees that this person isn't doing what they expect as a sort of human greeting behavior, they're going to do their dog greeting behavior. And, oh, by the way, it's also interesting for them because it's smelly there.
So I guess what we really need is somebody to teach us etiquette and how to talk to people when our dogs are sniffing their crotches. That's another specialist for another day.
Or alternatively, you can teach your dog to, you know, sit down for greeting as opposed to sniffing.
Okay, that's a good idea. Now we know why they sniff people's crotches, and it's a great idea. Let's teach them to sit instead of sniff. That's a whole nother day. However, why do they? Does that have anything to do with the fact that they like to eat disgusting things that have to do with crotches sometimes, like underwear, pantyhose, gross,
sure,
disgusting condoms? Ugh.
Well, they're definitely related by scent. For instance, these are all things that even though people might not think of them as smelly items, keep in mind, a dog can smell a fingerprint on a glass slide 6 weeks after it was left. So this is an animal with an extremely acute sense of smell. So all these things are just very interesting to them. They explore their world through scent, and these things are smelly objects. And oh, by the way, they explore them with their mouth as well, so they sometimes eat them. And if you're the type of person that sort of loses their cookies when they see their dog investigating something like this, you can actually accidentally train your dog to do it because you get up and it's very exciting. So you can actually have some learned components to this behavior as well if you're not careful.
Oh, lovely. So it turns out that we can train them to do those behaviors because we kind of encourage it because they're gross and then they get attention. Is that right?
Yes, yes. And of course, they're primarily motivating for the animal too, so it's kind of a double-edged sword.
So keep your condoms, your underwear, your pantyhose away from reach and don't make it a game. Is that
exactly
good advice?
Avoidance is the gold standard here, Dr. Levitan, definitely.
Okay. So I do a lot of Ask the Vet questions and one I get almost every single day. Why do dogs eat their own poop?
Right. You know, I always know one of my clients has given out my personal email at a cocktail party when I get that question in my email box. It's a really common one, and there are actually multiple reasons why dogs might eat feces. And the first reason is, of course, it's actually a normal behavior of dogs to do so, especially female dogs, because as they are nursing their puppies and they're keeping this little den/nest area together, they're keeping it clean by actually eating the fecal material that the pups produce. So it's a normal behavior, especially in female dogs. But there are are certainly a number of other reasons that dogs might do that. For instance, especially in young dogs, play and exploratory behavior is well up there, as well as just as we talked about with, you know, condoms and other smelly things. It's interesting, and oh, by the way, when they get interested in it, the people become very excitable, which can be, again, a way to accidentally teach your dog to become interested in these things because it gets everybody interesting behavior out of them, basically. And the other things to think about are medical concerns. You know, if your dog isn't really digesting his food as well as he ought to be, or if there's a malabsorption problem, for instance, or if there's an issue with appetite, for instance, your dog has a medical problem that increases your dog's appetite, or if your dog has a medical problem that requires medication that increases your dog's appetite, you can actually see them start to eat things that you wouldn't expect, and then that behavior can be maintained even after that disease or medication has gone away, especially if there are these learned factors at play.
It's just too disgusting. I mean, right. It can't taste good, right?
Ugh. Well, who knows? I mean, we're not dogs, and so we don't know what tastes good to them. And what we do know is they, by choice, will eat a lot of things that people wouldn't. You know, rotten garbage, the pantyhose we were talking about before. So, you know, to each his own. You know, my friends don't like oysters, and I do. But to them, one of the most disgusting things on earth.
So cat poop, same thing? I would think that they would like cat poop because maybe it tastes like fish or something different that they don't normally get in their diet. But we used to joke that my dog would eat cat poopsicles.
Right. And it seems to be, at least anecdotally true, I'm not sure if there's actually any peer-reviewed literature on this, but it does seem to be anecdotally true that dogs prefer stool that's very hard. In fact, one of the treatments for coprophagia is to increase fiber in the diet of whatever dog species they're eating, whether it's their own or somebody else's, so that the stool is looser and therefore not as appetizing.
Okay.
At least if you think of a dog finds it as appetizing. But also in the case of cat stool, you have to remember that cats are obligate carnivores. So there probably is, and I'm no nutritionist, but the sort of the anecdotal thought along these lines is that, well, cats eat only protein, basically, theoretically. And so they have much more proteinaceous stool, so that may make it much more appetizing. I mean, that, of course, can't be the only reason dogs eat stool, because we know they also like the stool of herbivores, like, say, horses, for instance.
Yeah, they seem to just like a lot of poop.
Yeah, basically.
Just think how much better our lives would be, everybody, if we enjoyed poop that got thrown at us all the time. Anyway, here's one more question before we go to a break. Why do they eat grass? I mean, you said they're obligate carnivores, mostly cats are. So why do they like to eat grass? Dogs and cats like to eat grass.
Well, dogs are omnivores, and so it's not really out of the bounds of norm that they might eat some vegetation. And actually, there is one study published on why dogs like to eat grass, and it's just an initial study. I think there's a lot more work to be done. And what they found is that younger dogs are more likely to do it than older dogs, and that this idea of dogs being sick and that's why they're eating grass or being sick after eating grass is not necessarily it's not bared out in that study, really. And also, they didn't find any indicators that there was a dietary reason for them to do that, in that they studied the different dogs' diets. And it wasn't like if one dog was eating raw food and the other dog was eating, you know, a really corn-based diet and another dog was eating a high-protein kibble, that there was any difference between which of those dogs would eat grass. So I think there's a lot of potential hypotheses sort of over evolution why dogs might eat grass. One of them is that, you know, eating these grassy or fibrous plants might actually help deal with intestinal parasitism, kind of a cleaning out of the GI tract, if you will. There's definitely some theories out there, but I think there's really just a lot more to be done. And it's funny because such a, you know, simple behavior, we think of it, but since it's kind of innocuous, it hasn't really received a lot of attention.
Well, we still don't really know then, do we? But it must not matter whether or not it tastes good. We just learned that a few minutes ago.
Right.
Well, we have to take a break here, but we'll continue learning about why our pets do the grossest things right after these messages from our sponsors.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Well,
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
New York, the glitz, the glamour, the exciting Mutt-tropolis, the sparkling kitty city that never sleeps. Join us each week for Pets in the City with your host, Diane West. Celebrity pet sightings, hot events, and news and reviews with the hottest movers, shakers, and tail waggers in New York. So take a bite out of the Big Apple with Pets in the City every week on demand only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
We're back, and we're glad you waited because we have veterinary behavior specialist with us, Dr. Elise Christensen, and she's been giving us the dirt. Speaking of dirt, why do dogs eat dirt?
Well, if you have a dog that's eating dirt, I think you really need to see your veterinarian. Because while some dogs may eat dirt as part of a normal exploratory behavior, if your dog's really focused on eating dirt, then I do get worried that there's something going on with him from a medical perspective. For instance, having anemia can cause some dogs to want to eat soil. And that doesn't just happen in dogs. That can happen in a number of other species as well. Eating non-food items, like dirt especially, makes us all wonder about whether we're having some sort of medical issue going on. So it's not necessarily something you need to worry about, but if it's a new behavior, it's definitely worth mentioning to your veterinarian. Obviously, the other things that can come into play are similar to the ones that we discussed before with some of these other issues, which is, you know, if your dog is eating dirt and you start paying attention to when he's eating dirt, you can teach him to do it, but you should still be hunting up those medical concerns as well.
Okay. Now, here's the question I think we've all been waiting for. Now, I know I've been waiting for it, and this always happens at the worst time ever. There's got to be, again, a room filled of people dressed up, all the attention's focused on one person, and all of a sudden, the dog starts to hump a person in the room. Why do dogs mount people in front of other people? Is it just to embarrass us? I mean, why are they doing this?
Right. It's one of those things that can have multiple reasons. It is probably one of the most embarrassing things that happens with owners and their dogs. I mean, poop eating is way up there. A big, bad, explosive, aggressive event out on the street is way up there. And humping people, even humping other dogs, can be really embarrassing for owners. But keep in mind that mounting in dogs is, of course, a normal behavior. It's something that if you go to the dog park, you'll see some of. And it's not always sexual, even though I think a lot of us think of it that way. I mean, sure, mounting is a reproductive behavior, but it's also social behavior in dogs and can also be part of play. Also, some dogs will do this as what's called a displacement behavior. For instance, they're very agitated or very worked up, and they're not really sure what they're supposed to be doing, so they try this behavior. And some dogs, as a displacement
sounds like some guys I know, Dr. Christian.
Right, exactly. So some dogs will scratch as a displacement behavior or yawn, and so you might see those dogs that are like getting to the end of the sidewalk, and then they're supposed to sit for their owner before they cross the street. A lot of these dogs, you'll see them sit down and scratch. So that kind of behavior can actually end up being mounting, and I think that's when people really notice it because, of course, it's distressing then. And the unfortunate thing about mounting is that what do people do when a dog mounts? Well, then they interact with the dog, right? They try to push a dog away, which can be fun for a dog. They shake their leg, which can be fun for a dog. So you go from these sort of primary motivations for giving it a shot, and then you end up with the human response that can accidentally reinforce it.
So I was always under the impression that they mounted because of dominant behavior. Is that not true?
Well, a lot of people talk about it like that, but I got to tell you, Dr. Levitan, I mean, the ideas of social dominance and how that really plays out, they're not as cut and dried as people think. And I wouldn't say that there isn't a social component to some types of mounting, because I believe there certainly can be. But it's not as cut and dried as people say when they say, for instance, if your dog eats before you, your dog is dominant, or if your dog mounts you, your dog is dominant. That's not necessarily the case. So I think it's best when you're having this type of problem. I mean, it's fun to conjecture about the underlying cause, because, you know, you'll basically never know the answer unless you work with a true expert and that expert can find out why. But the truth of the matter is that even if you don't know why, a lot of times you can manage this problem or treat this type of problem. So that's the good news. Since, you know, I'm not a mind reader and I don't pretend to be a dog psychic, I have to just tell my clients my best hypothesis based on what they're telling me and what I see from the animal. And then we make our best treatment plan based on that.
So the greatest part is, the most embarrassing part for me is that my kids like to imitate them, and they're young, and they don't know that it's completely inappropriate. And if I try to tell people that it's normal play behavior, then I might get child services coming to my door. So I think I need some training in my house for our kids and for myself.
Right.
It's a tough one, and they always seem to really pick a really bad time. But I see what you're talking about, because when my dogs get excited, they all start to bark and run around, and all it's inevitable. One dog will not know what to do, and he'll start mounting another dog.
Exactly.
Thank you. I'm really learning a lot today. Thank you for all this. So here's another question. Our dogs love to eat cat poop, and then they come and lick our faces. Not necessarily in that order, but why do they like to lick our faces?
Well, again, there are learned components at play here. When the dog licks your face, what do you do? A lot of times people make kissy faces at them and scratch them under the chin, which are, for some dogs, very motivating. But also keep in mind that when you watch dogs as they approach one another, if they're having some friendly greeting behavior, licking of the facial region is actually a popular thing for them to do. It's actually quite common, and it's normal. So do dogs think of people as sort of two-legged dogs? Well, I don't know, but what I do know is that sometimes they offer behaviors towards us that they might offer towards other dogs. For instance, if you watch a mother and her puppies, this is actually behavior that puppies do, and here's where you get into the gross stuff, Dr. Levitan. This is actually behavior puppies do to get their moms to regurgitate food for them. They'll kind of come up, they'll be a little bit low to the ground, they'll wiggle their little rear ends, and they'll lick at their mom's chin, and then she'll regurgitate for them. So, of course, my mentor, Dr. Hauft at Cornell, she was always talking about how you shouldn't let your dog lick your face, because, you know, it's kind of a demanding behavior. They're asking you to regurgitate food. But keep in mind that, of course, this behavior may start that way, but it can have its own sort of developmental process where it becomes reinforced by other things in the end, like human attention.
Yeah. Why, you know, we need a human behaviorist now, because why do we like it so much?
I don't know. I mean, people like kissing each other. People anthropomorphize or give their dogs human emotions all the time. So it feels, I think, to many people, a very affectionate behavior. And in many dogs, I mean, again, I don't know what dogs are actually feeling, but it looks affectionate, doesn't it?
It really does. And I mean, I always thought that they kissed us because they loved us, not because they wanted us to vomit in their mouth.
Right. Maybe it's because they want us to regurgitate. Maybe it's because we pet them. Maybe it's because they like the face cream we're using or whatever we just ate for dinner. Who knows?
Oh, my gosh. It's too funny. It's too funny. Well, those are some things I really, really never knew. And so what are some other things that you get as a behaviorist that people are always wanting to know about?
Well, I got to tell you, from a gross perspective, it's actually pretty uncommon for me to have people show up in my office because their dog's doing something gross, with the exception of pretty extreme coprophagia, which does show up in my office. You know, a dog that's eating stool and it hasn't responded to traditional therapies like taste aversion therapies and things like that. Sometimes those will show up in my office, but most of my patients are dogs that maybe they do have that as one of their complaints. There's, well, their owner's complaints. But usually they're coming in for other things, like they're so anxious that they're jumping out of windows, or, you know, they're hiding in the sink during thunderstorms, or they attack every visitor that comes in, or they've bitten the three-year-old, that kind of thing. So it's actually funny, when we started talking about doing this show on gross things, that I was having a hard time coming up with them, because, first of all, I've been in animal behavior for so long. To me, some of these things, like face licking, I don't think of it as gross.
No, neither do I, actually. I actually like it. I admit it. I go to Face Licking Anonymous and all those things, but I just really, really like it. I'm Dr. Levitan, and I like face licking.
Right. Well, you can put me on that list for that support group as well. Now, I think that, you know, it's actually a a good idea to keep in mind that sort of non-dog people do find these things gross, because when you think about getting, especially a large breed dog, when you have these guys in your house as puppies, that's when you really want to start working on some of these behaviors that in the long term could be objectionable to some of your guests, like the crotch sniffing and the jumping and the mounting and, you know, the trying to jump up to lick a person's face. Or licking a person's face as they sit down. And those are all things that you can work on you can work on them at any age, but it's great to work on them when the dogs are young and small, because it's easier to work on it then, because it's easier to ignore the behaviors you don't want, and it's easier to reinforce the behaviors you do, which is the best way to work on those behaviors overall.
So what do you recommend that people do to work on these behaviors?
Well, it really depends on the underlying motivation for the behavior, but the first thing to think about whenever you're saying to yourself, I don't understand why my dog does X, is to answer the question, what do I do as an owner when my dog does X? Because if what you do when your dog, say, jumps up on you is go to push him away, then you are reinforcing this behavior.
Hmm.
So the number one thing you can ask yourself as an owner when your dog's doing something you don't prefer is, how do I respond and how could I be reinforcing this behavior? The second thing you should ask yourself is, how can I keep this behavior from happening again? For instance, in the case of garbage surfing, put the garbage in a place where your dog can't get to it. Totally a no-brainer, right?
Hello.
When you can, avoid. Because actually doing training and behavior modification, it's great. But if you can't even avoid the stimulus while you're working, well, geez, that's going to make it pretty tough for your dog to do the right thing. And it's going to make it really easy for him to make a mistake that's going to make you upset and make it harder for you to train with, you know, your head on your shoulders instead of your head exploding. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. We're out of time right now, Dr. Christensen, and we really want to thank you and Mr. Mark Winter, our producer, for making this show possible. If you have more questions for Dr. Christensen or you want to learn more about her, you can see all about her by checking out New York City Veterinary Specialists. That's where she works, in New York City, and their website is www.nyc-vs.com. Dr. Christensen, I think our listeners really would love to have that website information again. Can you give that to us?
Sure. The websites are www.dacvb.org and www.avsabonline.org. And actually, that AFSAB online site has a really good summary of different types of behavioral professionals, what their educational backgrounds are, and what types of problems they're appropriate for. But in short, a veterinary behaviorist is a veterinarian. It's the type of veterinarian that can rule out medical problems that contribute to behavior, talk about medication if that seems indicated for an anxiety disorder, for instance, and also work directly with your veterinarian on a professional level that's going to be a little bit different than what a dog trainer or sort of an animal behaviorist that's not a veterinarian can do. But there are other big differences between those groups, and you can find more information on that at the dacvb.org and avsabonline.org.
Now, those are a lot of letters, and I think it's really important that everybody really does understand the difference between veterinary behaviorist and animal trainer. Please go to PetLifeRadio.com, click on the Pet Doctor, and we'll have those websites up there for you. Those are a lot of letters to remember. And if you'd like transcripts of this show or any other show on Pet Life Radio Network, just go to PetLifeRadio.com and click on the Pet Doctor. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for the show, please email me at thepetdoctor@PetLifeRadio. It's been my pleasure to guest host The Pet Doctor, and I hope you hear from me again soon.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.